Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus, and today I'm proud to present a special September 11th edition of Nick Curto Presents The Creative Process. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you?
Oh, never better, Hercules. Thank you so much for your warm introduction. And today is, of course, a very special day for sure.
Yes. Now, today's an unusual show as well, because instead of the creative process of other people, we'll be focusing on the creative process of Nick Curto, activist, adventurer, artist, and investigator.
Well, you know that all those things, I do wear a lot of different hats, as you well know, and they do complement each other. They really do in a lot of ways, and that has happened through my entire life. But I've always been, even as a kid, small kid, very creative. I've always felt that was an area that I felt very confident and really very excited about. And I would draw, and I would paint, and I would make little sculptures of sorts, and I felt very comfortable with that. And The whole process of being creative is I would say almost magical, because you're creating something new, something that wasn't there before, and that is a wonderful experience. And for the people who are creative, I'm sure very well what I'm talking about. During high school, I was born in Springfield, Massachusetts, and in Springfield, there's a wonderful museum complex on State Street, and one of the museums there, the George Walter Vincent Smith Art Museum, had a program on the weekends where people could sign up, again, young people, to take courses in painting and drawing, which I did. And it was a great way to meet other people who were creative and to do various projects. Usually sketching and painting were what we were taught. And the teacher was always very supportive of every one of us, and said that we were showing great talent and to keep at it. So that was a very wonderful experience that I'm very grateful to the museum for putting a program like that on, and it was free to anyone who was interested in attending. So that went a long ways. When I applied for a college, there was only one college that I really wanted to go to after reading about the other colleges in the state and the states around Massachusetts, and that was the Massachusetts College of Art and Design in Boston, Massachusetts. That just seemed like a perfect fit for me. So I prepared a portfolio of my designs and my artwork, and on a day of, I think it was probably in the spring, if I'm not mistaken, I went to Boston and met the teachers there, and then waited my turn to show my artwork. And that was quite an experience. They asked me questions about my creativity and what I was doing and how I felt about design and what areas I especially were attracted to. Really good questions. And then they said, okay, we're going to make a decision. We have a huge amount of people that applied for the college, and a fraction of those people will be getting letters of acceptance. And so stay tuned and be patient, and you will get a letter in the mail. And after about a month's time, the letter came, and my mother said, Nick, the letter from the Massachusetts College of Art and Design is here. And boy, was that a moment, because that really was the trigger of if I was going to be going to an art school and a college, or of my choice, the one I want to go to, or not. Now, if the letter had said, you haven't been accepted, and again, a lot of people applied, Well, then I would have to think about something else to do, and I would probably stick close to Springfield where my parents and my sister lived and my relatives. So I would really have to find something there, something creative, maybe in the newspaper there, the Springfield newspaper, or maybe a book organization where I could design something. So I said a prayer, and I took a deep breath, and I opened the letter, and it said, Nick Curto, you have been accepted at the Massachusetts College of Art and Design. I'm telling you, if there was ever a pivotal moment in my life, that certainly is one of them, because my dream came true, and I was to report in the fall in Boston to the college. They didn't have a dorm, which meant I had to find a place to stay, which I finally did on Francis Street, which is very close to Brookline and Longwood Avenues, where the college was located. And it was a boarding house. I had a bedroom along with, I believe, about 10 other people in various bedrooms, and we all had the rights to use the kitchen and store things in the cupboards or use the stove or the refrigerator. We all had to write our names on the foods, all that. And so there I was. I went there in the fall. I started college, and it was an amazing moment. I connected immediately with the students there, the other students, the freshmen. They were terrific, every one of them, and we were so happy to be there and to explore our creativity for 4 years with pretty intensive courses, all kinds of courses in various aspects of the creative life, everything from life class to design class. We had typography classes, with calligraphy classes where we studied Chinese calligraphy and then translated that into typography letter forms. I picked the advertising graphic design course after the second year. Other people picked courses in teaching art, ceramics, fashion. The fashion group was there. The painting group was there. So they had a lot of different divisions after the second year when you had to pick which you were going to major in. So again, advertising graphic design was a really good fit for me. So that's what I went into. And my professor, Arthur Honer, who I have to say was just an amazingly wonderful professor. We really loved him. He was very insightful. He had a lot of inspiration that he would give us, and we learned a lot. So that was an amazing 4 years. After that, we graduated, and I knew somehow that my life would be in New York City. I didn't know anybody in New York City. I certainly didn't have a job, but I knew that that's the next step. So when I graduated, I grabbed a Greyhound bus with my plaid red suitcase and my portfolio. Uh-huh. And here I went to New York. I found a little place to stay in a hotel overlooking a very popular restaurant called Rosoff's at the time. But they had a little hotel up there, and that's where I stayed. And that's where I started looking for a job, which eventually I found, and also an apartment, which eventually also I found that also. So there I was, and my dream of becoming a artist designer in New York City was starting to take place. And what an amazing experience that was. I worked for some very major advertising companies and also some small studios too. And I had all kinds of different accounts that I would be doing layout and sometimes doing copywriting and sometimes picking models who would pose for whatever ads we were doing. And it was an amazing experience. I met a lot of great people. I worked with other art directors, and I worked with writers, and of course the models and the photographers. And it was, again, it was just an amazing experience of growth. And so I did that for a good part of my life. And it was also a time when I I was exploring other questions, which included spirituality and also spiritual diversity, because, as you know, New York City has so many different peoples of different countries, different dialects, different races, all mixed in to this incredible city. So I met people of various faiths, and I asked about their belief system. In some cases, they invited me to join them when they were celebrating various religious holidays according to their faith. So this, again, was quite an experience to mm-hmm. to see what other people were doing as far as worshiping a god. And I did that. I went to St. Patrick's Cathedral because I was raised Roman Catholic, but I soon wanted to find other places too, and I ended up at the Unitarian Church, which is a short walk from where I live on East 85th Street. That's on Lexington Avenue and 78th Street, and it's a very respected, beautiful church. And I started going there every Sunday, and I did do that for about 2 years. Every Sunday, I would go to the Unitarian Church, and what they did there was read from a wide variety of spiritual books or books of inspiration. So that alone was quite an education. And after 2 years, one Sunday morning, for the very last reading of that Sunday, the minister said, "I'm going to read to you a few paragraphs from the Urantia book, U-R-A-N-T-I-A. Never heard of that in my life, and I thought maybe that's an Eastern Indian a book of some sort, a faith book. I didn't know. Well, when he started reading it, it resonated to me big time. And make a long story short, I bought the book, found the study group, and I've now been reading it for a good part of my life. And I highly recommend that. It's a cutting-edge spiritual book. It is filled with love, certainly, and it's inspiring. It has inspired me all this time. So I highly recommend that. The Urantia book you can find online and read it or even hear it, and that is a website. I'm going to give you that. It is www.urantiabook.org. I highly recommend that. Anyhow, so doing all kinds of projects here in New York City, and creatively meeting a lot of people of various kinds, models, songwriters, musicians, performers. It is still an amazing experience. I'm going to go right now to what happened on 9/11, because here we are on the 20th anniversary of that. Hercules, where were you on 9/11, if I may ask?
Sure. I was working in Brooklyn, and I arrived at work at 90 seconds. That shouldn't be right.
Well, what's that?
It said 90 seconds, the announcement. So I'm trying to look at the time.
Oh.
Here, let's change this now.
Huh.
There we go.
Interesting.
Hopefully that'll do it. Yeah, that would have been horrible. I was working in Brooklyn in a agency that helped people who were temporarily homeless, and they needed to be in shelters or in apartment programs. And I saw my boss, he was looking out the window. So I said, "Hey, what's up?" And he goes, "It looks like the Twin Towers on fire." So I looked where he was looking, and it did look like the Twin Towers were on fire. So we got the TV out of the presentation room and turned it on to see what was going on. And then while we were doing all that, we saw a plane, both on TV and with our own eyes, crash into the Twin Towers again. So then all these reports were coming in, contradictory reports about what was going on. And some of them said the Pentagon had been destroyed, Chicago had been destroyed. There was like it was horrible. And then they dismissed everybody, which was okay on one level, but on the other level, it was raining asbestos outside, which isn't a good thing. Isn't a good thing to be dismissed into. And all the buses and all the trains weren't operational. So wherever it is you had to go, you had to walk. So it was quite an adventure. I'll never forget it. And all the uncertainty. And then New York got taken over by people in, like, army uniforms and guns. And they had no sense of humor. And at the time, I had a television show. So people in the city were used to walking around in fur and leather and with a sword and all this. So I started getting stopped every single block. They'd have to check me out until they told, no, he's an entertainer. He's one of the New York eccentrics. Just let him be. He's okay. But getting stopped every single block and people pointing machine guns. And it just became a bit too much. So that effectively killed the first incarnation of my show. And we had to get very creative and come up with something we could do with all this stuff going on.
Wow. Yeah, it was certainly, I think everybody worldwide, this was a very, very disturbing, sad, and shocking day for sure. Now, the week before 9/11 of that year, I had a timeshare in Disney World in Florida, where you could live right there in the park for 1 week. And so I took a couple of my friends and went there, and we had a great time. And, of course, when you're in Disney World in Florida or even Disneyland in California, you know that it's an incredibly happy experience. I mean, everybody is your friend. The animals come up to you and shake your hand. You know, Disney's magic is all over that park. And for 1 week, we were there, living that in that park and sharing all the rides and all the shows and so forth. And you go out of that vacation feeling on top of the world. Like peace in the world, everybody is happy and getting along. It's a small world after all, but if you know that little ride there where everybody from different parts of the world is all singing together, you know it's a very up feeling. And in fact, that song, you cannot get that song out of your head. Once you go into that ride, you'll be singing It's a Small World After All for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely right. Have you ever had that experience?
I never went to Disney World, but it was Disney at the World's Fair when I was a kid. So that song stayed in my life since then. And I still find myself.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely true. So anyhow, so the reason I'm telling you that is we came back, and the next day I turned on the Today program on TV, and that was 9/11. So I went from a wonderful, joyous week of love and getting together and loving everybody, that sort of thing, to the worst nightmare that anyone could ever face, which was 9/11 happening not a very long distance, about maybe a 25-minute subway ride from where I live. And the buildings, as you know, were coming down, and people were dying. I guess about 3,000 people lost their lives that day, that morning. And needless to say, what a shock that was. What a shock. And but one other thing, too, is that they, as you know, they stopped all the airplanes from flying because they didn't know if there'd be another attack and where it would be. And that was a very real concern. We just didn't know if that was the only place that was going to be struck, either in Manhattan or in America, for that matter.
Hi.
What was next? So with that, what happened was that I had to go out the next day just to get some air and to kind of calm my nerves. And I walked about 30 blocks south where I live, and there's a wonderful men's shop there that I happened to go by. And I looked in the window, and I'm seeing in the window a leather jacket with it had to be a foot wide American flag in leather, in red, white, and blue on the back of the leather jacket. And I thought, You know, I got to get that jacket, especially now, especially now. And, you know, if I'm going to die, if there's going to be another attack and I'm going to die, I want to die with an American flag jacket. That's exactly how I felt. So I went in, bought the jacket and put it on and proudly wore that jacket and just felt as though, okay, world, you know, I'm an American. I'm proud of it. I'm wearing this jacket. And maybe a little defiant. And I was also, of course, very angry at what had happened. So I'll never forget that experience. Now, I'm going to jump from that part to what's going on now, because there is an assault, an aggressive assault on America, and especially on Americans, that a couple of people have said to me, I'm afraid to wear my sweater outside because it has a big American flag on it. And I said, why would that be? And they said, well, because it might upset somebody if they see the American flag. I said, please don't think like that. You're a proud American wearing an American flag sweater. Good for you. Please do that. But there has been, especially the last few years, some real negative feelings and negative talk about our country. And our country has done so much for humanity, for democracy, for freedom of thinking, and to really stand up to some very vicious dictators and so forth. And we have a lot to be proud of. And right from the very beginning, when we stood up to the British, who just simply thought that we were going to be their colony, we were going to pay them tax, and that was the end of it. And they didn't realize that that's not what we wanted. We wanted to be free, and we wanted our own country, the United States of America, as the name came up. That's what we wanted, and we fought for it. So 1776, as you know, they drew up the Constitution, and that was a long, long process, and God bless every person who worked on that amazing, amazing achievement. When you go to Washington, D.C., don't miss going to see the original Declaration of Independence. It's quite a breathtaking a thing to see the original there. And so again, all those factors, I've always been very proud to be an American. I'm half Italian and half Irish. My ancestors came to this country to get a better life, to try to get a better life and work hard, which they did. And we've got a lot to be grateful for to America for that, for the opportunity. So again, this last few years with some of this very negative talking about America and, you know, being negative about the country. And I've heard some of this too, and it's been very disturbing. And on some of the media, like on television and other interviews, some people have kind of downgraded this country. That's upsetting to me because it's not deserved. It just isn't. This was a long, hard fight for America. And, you know, it's not a perfect place. It's not a perfect country. We're growing and we're learning all the time. Since 1776. So it's a process that we're all going through. So that led to some creative thinking on my part about America and what could I do to perhaps join the dialogue about this country. What can I do? Could I make something, a design perhaps, or a painting or something like that? I didn't know what it was. And I started thinking about lyrics to a song. Now, I have written songs in the past. Mm-hmm. I'm still working on a Broadway musical comedy I'm very excited about. At some other time on the show, I'd love to talk about that. But I'm co-writing the book, and I am the author, the lyrics and the music for the songs in the musical comedy. And someday I hope to have that on on stage. Broadway, here we come. I think it's a very exciting show. It really is. So anyhow, back to the music, and I started thinking about lyrics of if there were a song, what the lyrics might be. And I started coming up with something, and it started making sense. Once I got going with it, one thing led to the other, and I started rhyming. And some of the key words that were starting to come up in the song were the words stand up for America, because we need to do that. We need to stand up and be proud of our country. So Stand Up for America came to mind as part of the lyrics. And then I thought, if everyone was singing the song, maybe it should be We'll Stand Up for America. So then We'll Stand Up for America became the title. And some of the other lyrics are, and I'm going to give you an idea of the lyrics, and here they are. At one point, the song goes, our home that we love, this land of the free, will always protect and defend our land of democracy. We'll protect the Constitution. We'll protect the Bill of Rights that changed the whole wide world when our red, white, and blue flag unfurled. And that ended up being part of the lyrics. Another part of the lyrics is, wake up, be proud, wake up, be free, wake up the world, wake up for liberty. And that is another part of the song. So very, very, I would say, in-your-face sort of lyrics. It's not messing around and being vague. It's very in-your-face saying, we are proud. It's a great country, and we want to acknowledge that. So that became the lyrics that I worked into a song. So I ended up writing the full lyrics to the song, and then I went looking for the musicians, some group that could actually do a demo of the song. And I went looking a lot. It was a very hard process to find the right band to do this. And because I knew in my head what the sound should be. It's a little bit like a hard rock song,
yes.
Not only for the young people, but for everyone else. And also, I wanted something that people not only could stand up when they heard the song, but if they had American flags, like if they were in a rally, a political rally, they could wave those flags high in the sky and sing the song, that they to actually sing the song itself and have a great time. And the song, I wanted it to be very danceable. So if you wanted to dance to this song, this is going to be the song to do it. So with all that in mind, I really combed around until I found the right group. And I told them what kind of, emphasis and power I wanted the lyrics to convey. And I actually set up a Zoom meeting with the band. And I said, okay, this is my song. And I literally sang the song with no accompaniment. I just sang the song to the people on the Zoom meeting, the musicians. And so they really got firsthand what was in my head, you know, what I wanted the song to be like, what the style was, what the power of the song was. And they were terrific. They understood right away. They said, Nick, we got it. We understand. We're going to find the right singer for you. And I said, you know, it's a hard rock song, so like a Mick Jagger kind of a guy, not something very laid back, but something really out there, like a real hard rock song. And they said, you know, I think we got somebody. And they ended up finding the right person for the part. So there we have, now we have the band, and we have the song, and we have the singer. So this is all starting to come together. And another part of this picture, I just want to, Hercules, tell them about the beginning of the song, because I wanted it to be like a time travel, if you will, going from 1776 to 2021 and beyond, musically, musically. So how do you do that? Well, it ended up that I thought, when I think of 1776, I think of a fife and drums. Uh-huh. And there were some songs like that, including a song called Yankee Doodle. Have you ever heard that song?
Of course.
Right. We used to sing that in grade school. We used to sing that song. We didn't know what the lyrics meant. They were kind of crazy, crazy lyrics that made really no sense to us, but we loved the song. And I remember singing it even in grade school. We used to sing that song. Yankee Doodle went to town riding on a pony, put a feather in his cap and called it macaroni. What? What? But again, it musically conveyed 1776. So I went to a dear, dear friend of mine, multi-talented friend in music, Tom Garber, a dear, dear friend of mine. We go way back, and he is a composer. And I said, I just wrote a song, Tom, and I'm looking for a beginning of the song that would have a fife and drums with it. And we came up with Yankee Doodle as exactly that kind of song, because it would immediately bring people back musically to 1776. So what I said to him was, can you do this on your computer? And I would like a little tiny bit of Yankee Doodle at the beginning and the end of my song. And here's the trick. I want the beat of the song of Yankee Doodle to blend into the beat seamlessly to my hard rock song. Can you do that? He said, yes, we can. And he did. And when I heard the magic that he did with his computer, he got it right. And I was thrilled with that. So when we got the recording from the band, we added the beginning and the end of the song, which is a bit of Yankee Doodle musically. And Hercules, do you know the backstory of Yankee Doodle? Like what is going on with that particular song?
No, I do not. Do you?
Yes, I do. I happen to know that. The tune is believed to be older than the tune itself is believed to be older than the words, possibly dating to 15th century Holland. 15th century Holland. We all know the term Yankees, referring to Americans or Northerners or at least New Englanders. Now, doodle is thought to have come from a low German word doodle, D-U-D-E-L, which means playing music badly, or the other meaning is signifying a fool or a simpleton, a fool or a simpleton. Now, macaroni needs a little more of an explanation. The macaroni wig was top fashion in the 1770s for elite groups, yet regularly mocked by the London press. They used the term macaroni to describe a fashionable man who dressed and spoke in an effeminate manner. Dandies were viewed as men who, among other things, placed prominence on physical appearance. A British middle-class man who tried to look the part of someone with a great importance was a self-made dandy who literally stuck feathers in his hat. So this became a bit of a ludicrous situation. Now, putting this all together, it's easy to believe how British conversation viewed the term Yankee Doodle Dandy as a bit of a mockery, as a simply placed a feather in someone's cap would make them a person of nobility. I mean, it was insane. So Yankee Doodle became a pre-Revolutionary War tune. Here it comes now, sung by the British military officers to mock the colonial Yankees. Now, I never knew that.
No,
through the British, though the British served beside them, the Americans, in the French and Indian Wars of 1754 and through 63, they viewed, in other words, the British viewed the Americans as disheveled and disorganized. The song's first words were written around 1755 by a British army surgeon, and the British troops sang the tune to ridicule and mock the stereotype of American soldiers insulting the colonists who they felt were low-class men lacking masculinity and style. Well, these Americans were made up of farmers and people like that, so they didn't have money. They didn't have fancy uniforms like the British had, of course. They had simple muskets. The British had the top guns, of course, and the boots and all the trappings that the British had. And the Americans were very simple people who believed that they needed to have their country of their own. They needed liberty, and they didn't want to be under the British anymore. So the British mocked them by singing this song to them with sarcasm and scorn. Now, I always thought it was an American song, but originally it was not. It was done deliberately to mock the Americans. Now, the tables turned, and this is really interesting. It became a song of defiance, and this is how that happened. There was a major conflict, a major war, and the British went in there with the best equipment, the best uniforms, everything. And they knew that they were going to win that particular battle. But as it turns out, the Americans won the battle, absolutely hands down won it. It was a surprise to the British. They were horrified, and they were running for their lives away from the battlefield. Well, guess what song the American soldiers sang as loud as they could to the British who were fleeing the war? Yankee Doodle.
Yankee Doodle,
because
yeah.
It was... you know what? You mocked us. You humiliated us as much as you could. Well, guess what? We're a better army than you. We just beat you. So it became a song of defiance. I love that. Just a little more of the actual history of this. A Harvard sophomore serving as a Minuteman wrote the ballad with 15 verses in 1775 or 1776, and that gained popularity. By 1781, the song had transformed from one of attacking American dignity to one of national American pride. So knowing that, putting that at the beginning of the song of We'll Stand Up for America just seemed like the perfect combination musically. So that's what we did creatively, creating the beginning of the song with Yankee Doodle, a little bit of that musically, not singing, just the music of that, then doing a hard rock song, and hopefully it will be used for rallies, for political rallies and so forth, and beyond. It's a song of pride of America and of being Americans. And I would like nothing more than to have some of the big rallies and small rallies play this song so people could wave their American flags that they brought to the rallies, stand up and cheer, and sing along to the words of this song. And that's my dream. And this program, as you know, is premiering this song and the backstory of this new song. Go ahead.
I'm greatly honored. Yes, and I've heard the song, it is. It's very catchy and it's very effective, and I can see your dream becoming a reality because I could hear it playing on loudspeakers at rallies and at other gatherings. It's a happy song, so despite the heaviness of its theme and the weight of today, it's a great song.
Oh, thank you for saying that. I worked really hard on that. A big thank you to the musicians and the singer who finally executed the song out. We got it. I think we got it right. Another big thank you to Tom Garber, a wonderful person, one of the nicest people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, along with many others, whose musical genius did add the beginning and the end of this song. And So one other note that's, that really propelled me, and I think our listeners would find this interesting, the song that they play the most for political rallies is very unusual, because the song, and you hear this all the time at political rallies, as well as a lot of the sports events, major sports events, and they play the Village People song all the time, YMCA, and it's a great song. It's a song that you can sing to and dance to, and I can see why they chose the song, but it's not in any way about essentially America or being proud of the country. What it's about is a group of guys going to the YMCA for a sport and to meet other people. So that's what the song is about. So in a way, I thought it was a little bit inappropriate when they're there holding the American flags and waiting for some sort of music to hold on to. And what they're playing is a very energetic song. I do like the song. In fact, I know the man who is the cowboy of the Village People. Really wonderful.
Wow.
But the thing here is that I thought that why not have a real patriotic song for these people to enjoy? So that, again, is part of the backstory of how this song came to be. So what do you say, you? Are we going to give it a go? Are we going to play the song?
Let's give it a go right now. And I'm very honored to have been part of your creative process. You shared bits and pieces of your journey. And I believe it's over a year now you've been working on the song. So I'm glad that it's finally a reality, and I'm honored to be listening to it. So onwards.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Hercules.
That was awesome.
Whoa, whoa. Were you dancing, I hope?
Wasn't dancing, but my head was swaying back and forth.
All right. All right. Well, you're all hooked up with the wires there with the earphones, so I can understand that. But if we get that song put on the loudspeakers at the beginning and probably in the middle of political rallies, I think you're going to have a whole stadium dancing and singing. And just this is brand new. I'm telling you right now that the music video, which has a lot of the visuals, is going to be probably finished in about a week's time. We're working on that right now.
That is awesome.
And that's very
cool. I have a link, and I'll gladly link to it.
Thank you. So that I'm very excited about that. This is a whole other chapter of pushing this music, is to do the music video of it. And I'm working with a wonderful woman on this right now, and she is she's exciting what she's envisioning the music video is going to be. I gave her a lot of ideas about what I thought it would be, but again, she's going to use her own creativity too. So I'm looking forward, and the deadline to have this finished is in about a week's time. So that's going on right now. And I'm a member of the BMI, I should say that, BMI, and also on a CD Baby, I'm also a member of that that organization. So that's what we got going on legally. It's now copywritten in the Washington Records of the Copyright Office. So I just got my certificate that is now copywritten.
Wow. So you're on your way. This journey has begun and it's launched, and I'm very excited for you, Nick. And I'm looking forward to updates as the journey progresses.
You know, thank you. Thank you again, Hercules. You're such a dear friend, of course. And what a producer you turned out to be. Oh, my God.
Well, you
are a dream come true for me. You really, and for many others, too. You really are. The way you produce programs and your imagination is just the best. So that's where we are with this project, and I'll keep you posted, of course, and the listeners is how we do. Do we have another few minutes?
Yes, you do. You actually have around 10 minutes.
Okay. I just wanted to, again, go back to the whole subject, the title of my podcast, The Creative Process, for a second, because I want to make a point here. And what the point is that I was trained as a visual artist. That's how I started, as a visual artist, design and graphics. And a good part of my life, I worked in the advertising field and graphics, designing logos and so forth, and all kinds of other projects. But my point is I also have other creative interests, and one of them was theater. And also music. So my point of telling you that is, for people who are creative, if you say I am a painter, or I'm a sculptor, or I'm a ceramicist, or I'm don't think that you could not also use your creativity to be a poet, or a songwriter, or work on a theater project. Write a script. In other words, don't box yourself in necessarily to one creative avenue, because I think when you expand your creativity in other areas of the creative process, you will be a goldmine of discovery. You will find so much more. And you can always use that information to go back to your original creative endeavor. So if you're a painter, try writing a poem, right? Or a song, or perhaps you would like to do, if you're, say, a ceramicist, but you have an idea for a dance, a choreography, go ahead. Do that. Take a chance. Step out of your normal life and go into put a different hat on. Try it. I'm telling you, it's the most exciting thing in the world to go into other areas of creativity. If you're a puppeteer, I know some incredible puppeteers, professional puppeteers. If you're a puppeteer, try writing a script for a film with live actors. It goes all over the place like that. Or maybe writing a book about your life. Or there's so many other ways to express creativity. And don't be locked in to necessarily one particular path. And that's something I think it's an important message that I wanted to give to our listeners this evening, that you've got a lot going on when you're creative, and latch onto that energy and go far and wide with that energy. And believe me, you won't be sorry for trying that. I've always been interested in theater all my life. And a couple of years ago, I started an improv acting class where I was teaching improv acting to amazing people, not only who were brand new to acting, but people who were professionals in the field and performers. And so there was a wide variety of people and skills, and I would give them a scenario of who they were in this particular piece, and what the situation was, and if there were going to be other actors in the piece, who were they, and generally what was the situation, and then say, okay, action. And then they would go into their creative process and feel out what was going to be done on stage. And that was incredibly exciting. I love that so much. And unfortunately, the venue that I rented to do my acting classes closed when the pandemic started almost now 2 years ago. And so when it reopens, I hope to start my acting class again. And again, that was a bright light in my life, a joyous experience, and I want to go back to that also.
You're right about the creativity. Creativity, I believe, is almost divine power, because you're taking something that doesn't exist, as you pointed out before, and you're bringing it into being. And that is a divine ability, if anything is.
You know, it's almost a spiritual experience, because you're creating something that wasn't there before.
Right.
And it's a magnificent feeling when you do something like that. And there are no wrong turns there. You just take a chance and do something. And as one of my teachers said, if you're doing design work and you don't exactly know what you want to do, make a mark on a piece of paper and then say, you know, maybe that mark should be red. Well, then change it. And then say, well, maybe that has a possibility of say a vase. So you start sketching a vase, and then you say it would be really good if the top were like way over, like a dome shape. So you're starting to build an idea. What if the what ifs? What if this? What if it was red? Or what if it was made of glass? Or maybe it's a ceramic piece. So the what ifs eventually will get you where you want to go. Again,
right.
It's a magic feeling to do that. You know, well, you, Hercules, by creating what you're doing with all your podcast programs, and you're creating a network, an incredible network that I give you a lot of credit. I mean, it's just the best thing that I've seen of one person with such an imagination as you. And you're bringing your best to this venture, all the different podcasts that you produce. And so, again, you're touching a lot of people.
Thank you. And I get to work with remarkable people like you. So it makes it a pleasure.
Well, thank you. If anybody has any comments, I would welcome any comments about my song or about my philosophies or anything you want to share with me. I would love that. I'm going to give you my email address. And if you have a piece of paper and a pencil, it is NICKNYNY1. And the one is the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com. And I promise you, I will answer each one.
That's how Nick and I met. I contacted him and he got back to me, and we've been doing creative things together for over half a decade now. So,
can you believe that? I mean,
yeah.
I know that it's true, but it seems like it's been such an amazing journey with you.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
And it went by so quickly. You wonder, it seems like almost yesterday we met in New York for coffee, and then that coffee conversation lasted for hours, and that sparked a lot of creativity on both our parts, and it produced tons of shows. So yes, call Nick.
and now with the new podcast, so many people are enjoying some, I would say, absolute finds, like Mark and Phyllis Brokerhoff. They are an amazing, amazing couple. Or
yes, they are.
Michael and Diane. Oh, my goodness. Michael and Diane. How incredible is that couple, too? And they all have now, thanks to you, you're the producer of their podcast. And so, again, amazing people are getting together, and then the listeners are benefiting from that.
And I'm very glad that it's able to accomplish that purpose. Because like you said, this is my creativity, and it's kind of like I view podcasts slightly differently. And so I go with that. I go with what creatively pushes me in a particular direction. And I'm very happy that it's been able to accomplish some of its objectives.
And how wonderful is that? I mean, it's a win-win for everybody. That's what it is, a win-win for everybody. And wow, I'm just really glad to be part of the process, really glad.
And I will be calling you this weekend or early in the week to discuss the monthly Zoom show. And so I'm really looking forward to that conversation as well.
Wow. And when we do a Zoom and I have the music video of the new song, We'll Stand Up for America, we'll be able to show it.
Yes, that'll be great.
Yeah. So again, it's really going to be quite a month.
Yes, it will. And now we're in the last minute and a half of the show. So if you could share your closing thoughts and encourage people some more, you did throughout your podcast, to express themselves. It is a spiritual thing, as you said.
It absolutely is. And so with that, I'm going to do my closing then, which is, this is Nick Curto for The Creative Process, wishing you all an enlightened and exciting journey as you find your own path to deepen your own creative energies more fully, developing your talents in however many areas of expression your life takes you. So till next time, fully embrace your creativity in one or more areas of expression. Stay safe and always, always be very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to everyone out there. Much love.
Thanks again, Nick, and thanks to everybody who tuned in, whether you dialed the number and you're waiting on our board, whether you clicked on a link and found yourself here, or whether you'll be checking out this episode later on demand. Until next time, this is us wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And Nick, in the few seconds we have left, do you want me to start the song again?
Sure, absolutely. Thank you for that. Yes.
Okay.